Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. For this podcast, it is building directly off of the last one with Chapter 6 of ATLS on head trauma. This is because, as I alluded to when we were in that podcast with Mike Sharma, about how we would need to talk about a certain subject in a little more detail just because of the complexities behind it and the fact that it deserves its own time. So that's why we went ahead and just talked about how maybe we could instead look at this in a slightly different view and do a bit of a deeper dive individually, which is what we're going to talk about today. So what are we talking about today? Well, we're comparing salt versus sugar, hypertonic saline versus mannitol for elevated ICP. And so this matchup here is one that has been ongoing for quite some time and trying to figure out which one is better. Some will argue that there really isn't a better in this scenario, that hypertonic saline is going to be good in certain situations and mannitol is going to be good in situations. And I think that's going to be true, but at the same time, I think it's worth recognizing the fact that there is some evidence to help point towards one direction or the other. And keep in mind, this is overall a lower level of evidence. There's not great strong evidence out there, which is why it's hard to find a solid recommendation on this, but it does justify some time in the form of a podcast separate from the rest of the ATLS series, including just talking about this in Chapter 6, which was already about an hour in length, to try and then talk about a subject that would take quite some time to go into. So let's talk about this a little bit more. But first, the first part we need to go over is the actual medications. So let's talk about mannitol first. It's used to reduce intracranial pressure, ICP, and is commonly prepared in a 20% solution, which is going to be 20 grams in 100 ml solution. As ATLS and others would recommend, it should be avoided in hypotension because mannitol does not lower ICP in patients with hypovolemia and is a potent osmotic diuretic. So people are just going to still pee out even if they don't have that volume, which is kind of similar to the effects that we see with other medications such as dopamine. The effect can further exacerbate hypotension and cerebral ischemia. This leads to acute neurological deterioration, such as if they have a quote-unquote blown pupil, so a dilated pupil, hemiparesis, or losing consciousness and unable to be aroused, then this is a strong indication for administering mannitol in a euvolemic patient. The recommended dosing is to bolus 1 gram per kilogram rapidly over 5 minutes and then to get them to definitive care, whether that's the operating room if the lesion's already been identified or to the CT if it will not delay transport to a higher level of care, assuming that you're not already in a place where you can get that person immediately to neurosurgery. Mannitol should be avoided if the serum osmolar gap exceeds 18 milliosmoles per kilogram to 20 milliosmoles per kilogram. And if you want to know how to calculate that out, that's going to be separate. But this is something that honestly may not be in the forefront of your mind, but you should at least understand that osmolar gap is something you need to at least think about when you're going to give mannitol. Some also suggest not exceeding a serum osmolality of 320 milliosmoles per kilogram if mannitol is to be considered. Okay, let's move on to hypertonic saline. It is also clearly used to reduce elevated ICP. This is considered the preferable agent in patients with hypotension as it does not act as a diuretic. It is generally available in concentrations of 3 to 23.4% with a dosing limit based on an upper serum sodium limit of 155 millimoles per liter. Generally, the recommendation is to choose a small volume to allow for a more rapid infusion of a higher concentration to give that over 15 minutes. So for example, if you have 23.4% hypertonic saline, give that because you're going to get the most concentrated amount and you can give it the most rapid. Briefly, just because you might see some research on this and because ATLS does touch on it just a little bit, we should talk about barbiturates. They're effective in reducing ICP refractory to other measures, although hypertonic saline does have a bit of that effect as well, but they should not be used in the presence of hypotension or hypovolemia. Furthermore, barbiturates often cause hypotension, so they are not indicated in the acute resuscitative phase. The hypotension can lead to the use of vasopressors, which in turn, the increase in systemic vascular resistance caused by the vasopressors may lead to in-organ hypoperfusion and significant metabolic acidosis, which in turn can worsen the hypotension. And so this leads into a vicious cycle. The long half-life of most barbiturates also prolongs the time for determining brain death, which is a consideration in patients with devastating and likely non-survivable brain injuries. Barbiturates are not recommended to induce burst suppression measured by EEG to prevent the development of intracranial hypertension. Sometimes a rapid bolus of IV pentobarbital is administered, but drips are generally not recommended. ATLS states, quote, high dose barbiturate administration is recommended to control elevated ICP refractory to maximum standard medical and surgical treatment. Hemodynamic stability is essential before and during barbiturate therapy, end quote. We should also just briefly talk about what brain herniation is, since the big thing what we're doing here is when we see elevated ICP, we're trying to prevent the herniation that's going to be coming. And we only really touched on that briefly with our ATLS Chapter 6 podcast on head trauma. So the brain herniates when brain tissue is shifted from one space on the brain to another. And this can occur side to side, down, under, across rigid membranes, such as the tentorium or falc. It can also occur through bony openings, such as the foramen omagnum, or through an opening that exists because of trauma. And if you want to get an idea of different examples, please check out a diagram that's included in the show notes. And right beside that diagram also talks about like the quote unquote golden rules that was from another great blog that is worth checking out. The links to that are also in the show notes because they kind of give some recommendations and kind of some quick reference facts and targets as far as like your target ICP should be less than 20 millimeters mercury and target osmolality and target serum sodium and those kind of things that, again, it's good to know, but is really simplified and quick to deliver right there in a visual format. So traumatic brain injuries can lead to increased ICP. We understand that. This leads to poor cerebral perfusion and brainstem compression. The more we can reduce the ICP, the greater the odds of survival. Our goal should then focus on the rapid and effective control of ICP and the avoidance of the herniation, as we just discussed. So when we parse through the evidence, we can often look at meta-analyses, and meta-analyses can be helpful, but when we look at that data, we still have to look at the overall quality of the evidence, which in these meta-analyses that we're going to talk about is overwhelmingly low to moderate evidence. And a lot of it's kind of on the lower end of the scale, which is not really favorable here, but a large part of that is due to these studies being small and heterogeneous. However, we should not fully discount these studies, as there does appear to be some signal that higher quality studies will hopefully one day parse out and we can better understand. So given the overall rarity of these circumstances to be able to even perform a study, it's hard to get randomized controlled trials or RCTs to be able to get this data. But there are at least some out there. They're just generally smaller single center studies with an overall population that makes it kind of hard to get any real conclusions, which is why meta-analyses can be really helpful. But until we can have a large RCT with a large sample size, multi-center, well-controlled, to answer this question, a lot of this is going to be a little bit of, well, what my friend Kim Mill says, it depends. So the earliest study that we're going to talk about is from Critical Care Medicine, and that was published in March of 2011. This study found that hypertonic saline was more effective than mannitol for the treatment of increased ICP, but admitted that there was a small number of eligible studies, and there was also a small sample size. Okay, so there's at least some signal there that hypertonic saline is beneficial. Then the Surgical Neurology International published another article in 2015 focused on comparing the two in TBI specifically. Out of the 45 articles that were identified, 7 were included in that review. 5 were prospective RCTs, 1 was a prospective non-RCT, and 1 was a retrospective cohort study. Okay, so some variation in the evidence already, which at least we need to recognize. There was heterogeneity in the studies on which was more efficacious, but both hypertonic saline and mannitol did reduce ICP. So their conclusion was that it should be decided on a case-by-case basis, given the number of factors that may be involved to decide which one is the appropriate agent. I can understand that because, like we said, we're looking at different things when we're looking at giving these medications, but again, we're going to talk a little bit more here in a second why hypertonic saline may have a little bit of an advantage. Then Cochrane Review in December 2019, they also compared hypertonic saline to mannitol with acute TBI-related elevated ICP. It's worth noting that they did try to look at other agents, but really all they could find was hypertonic saline and mannitol. They used six RCTs with 287 patients, and they did try, like I said, to look for other agents, but all they could really find was mannitol with or without glycerol. Their conclusions was that there was weak evidence that hypertonic saline was no better than mannitol in both efficacy and safety. Notice how they say no better. So it's not a superiority situation, which is what we want to also know, is not only, okay, do they do equally okay, which can sometimes be really jacked with statistics, but also, is there one that's better? Well, most recently, the Journal of Intensive Care published an article in August of 2020 on the effects of hypertonic saline versus mannitol in TBI patients in the pre-hospital, emergency department, and intensive care unit or ICU settings. It's worth noting, though, that the only studies that they found were going to be looking at the ICU, and they found four RCTs with a total of 125 patients. Notice that they have fewer RCTs than the Cochrane one in 2019. So they're a little more focused in, and that's something that's important to at least acknowledge, that there's going to be some variation here already. With a low level of certainty, they found no significant difference in hypertonic saline versus mannitol in regards to all-cause mortality or in secondary outcomes. And this is actually helpful because they did look at something that is very patient-oriented, and that's going to be all-cause mortality. Because yes, while it's good to be able to focus in on, was it from neurological injury, trauma cases, these are often quite complex. And so, you know, if we can look at all-cause mortality, we have a little more of a clear-cut answer as far as what we're going to look at in a pragmatic sense. However, even though we talked about the meta-analyses and how it is worth, you know, looking at the meta-analyses so we can get these bigger studies, in a sense, by taking smaller studies and piling them on up, there was a lot of heterogeneity there. And again, they're overall small. So it might be beneficial to look at the individual small studies. Again, that blog post I was talking about earlier, they did a great job summarizing these different RCTs, as well as some like retrospective stuff, but they focused almost entirely on RCTs that are out there. And when you look at the individual studies, there does appear to be a benefit of hypertonic saline over mannitol for the greater reduction of ICP. So not just do they reduce it, but what really matters, does it result in greater reduction? We find that with hypertonic saline, there's a greater reduction of ICP, including refractory elevated ICP. There's fewer treatment failures, and there's better cerebral perfusion. So these are all things that when we're looking at hypertonic saline versus mannitol is good, is the stuff that we want to see. Now, given it doesn't seem to parse out quite the same way when we talk about meta-analyses, which is all the more reason why we need high quality evidence. Hopefully, maybe there's going to be something similar to how they did the crash studies, where we can take many, many centers across the globe and be able to check this out, where we can say, okay, we'll randomize people to mannitol or hypertonic saline in a pragmatic fashion and see which one is better in the end. I think that's really the only way you're going to be able to get enough people in this study, because this is overall, again, a rare event. So in the end, what does this mean? Well, hypertonic saline has the potential, through the signal of the data of what we see, for a benefit over mannitol, but we have to recognize the current limitations of these studies, their heterogeneity, and their overall low quality of evidence, especially when we look at it in a meta-analysis format. So we still lack a clear, high-quality answer. But like I said, I think there's still a role and there's still benefit of hypertonic saline, and that quite possibly with what we are seeing, that hypertonic saline may be our better option when possible versus mannitol, especially since it can be given a little more easily with hypovolemic patients and there's less concerns of complications and less kind of labs you have to really focus in on. I'd really be curious your thoughts and your opinions on this too, especially when it comes to giving these medications and your experiences with them. Again, give us that feedback. I'd love to hear your thoughts. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.